Elections, Ethics, and Rules for Monday, March 19th, 2007. Welcome, members. Chair Rosenbaum is with another committee testifying at present. So we're going to jump around a little bit here to accommodate our great colleague, Representative Greenlick. So I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3270. And Mr. Stembridge.
Yes, Chair Buckley, this House Bill 3270 sets up a required hand count of ballots for offices won by a specified margin or less at each primary and general election. It requires county clerks to hand count a sample of ballots tallied by machine, compare the hand count with the machine tally of the same ballots, and if the hand count is significantly different from the machine tally, to count all ballots by hand. It establishes a seven-member vote count verification committee within the Secretary of State's office, appointed by the Secretary of State, and requires the committee to determine, not less than 30 days prior to the election, the criteria for this hand count review, including the contest margin to which the provisions apply, the minimum sample sizes that would be used, and the differences between hand counts and machine tallies that would trigger hand counts, hand recounts of all ballots. It requires the Secretary of State to publish criteria not less than 10 days prior to the election.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. Members, I'm going to ask Representative Greenlick to present his testimony, then I'll be temporarily closing the public hearing on this bill to open up a public hearing on HCR 8 at the request of our chair. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, Northwest Portland, all the way west for about 25 miles in Multnomah and Washington County. I'm going to start by putting on the record that I have extraordinary respect for our vote tally system in the state of Oregon. I think our vote tally system is been ahead of the game and does remarkably well. It has the primary characteristic for any legitimate vote tally system, and that's that there are paper ballots that at any time can be used to recount on the ballot systems. But I'm sorry to say that that not all citizens of Oregon have that same kind of confidence in the vote tally system. I believe that much of the fear and suspicion around electronic voting, electronic vote tally systems, relates to things happening in other states, in Florida, in Ohio, in many other states. And frankly, if I were a citizen of a state that had a pure electronic system with no paper ballots, I would be terrified. It might be simply paranoia, but as we all know, sometimes the paranoias get persecuted, and there is some fear in this. So I've worked with some of the folks in the state of Oregon who are concerned about the legitimacy of our vote tally system to try and create a bill that will, a method for assuring the validity of our tally system that will provide us security in our elections and will allow us to rest easily that all of our ballots are counted and are counted correctly as we vote in this state. There are two basic models in how you might do this. And one model would be to pick certain races, probably statewide races, and create a hand tally of a large sample in each of those races to verify the result of each race or some selected sample of statewide races. The problem that I have with that is that while it allows us to verify races, the sample may not be large enough for us to believe in the system that's being used to tally counts. We have, depending on the county, some number of vote tally systems, vote count machines we're talking about. They vary from a minimum of one in a county to perhaps as many as six or seven or eight machines in a county. And House Bill 3270 takes a particular perspective on how to assure the validity of our races. It creates a model that validates the results of each of those vote counting machines. The horror that we have about what might happen in a to a vote tally system is that somebody would figure out how to get into the software, frequently proprietary software, and part of the fear is the owners of that proprietary software might do it, get into the software, change the software so that at the minute it starts actually counting, that might be 8 o'clock in the morning of an election, till the time it stops counting, whatever that is, midnight that night of the election, the software will somehow be different than it was before that day or after that day. I mean, that's the basic fear. The basic fear is you test the machine beforehand, it works fine. You test the machine a week later, it's fine. But something was not fine in the period that the machine was actually counting the live votes. That's the danger that everybody is always worried about. So the question is, in my mind, how can we assure ourselves that every single one of those vote tally machines was operating properly? And the answer to that is a fairly simple answer. You find a way to draw a sample of the output of each machine. You isolate the results of each machine so that if you have eight machines in Multnomah County, you know what each machine tallied across all the races it was tallying, and then you add them up across the machines. But you isolate the results of that machine, you isolate the ballots that went into that machine, and you draw a significant sample of the output of that machine, of what went through that machine, and you hand tally those. The number will probably be, this bill has a group of statisticians defining that, but I think the number, from my statistical background, will be somewhere around 1,000 ballots per machine, and you count everything on those 1,000 ballots, and you compare the outcome from the sample with the outcome of the tally of that machine. If there's some discrepancies in that, you draw a second sample, and you hand tally the second sample. I think it would be very unusual to draw a second sample. If there is a discrepancy, you draw a second sample, hand tally the second sample of that machine, not of all the machines, but of the single machine that had a discrepancy. And if there remains a statistically significant discrepancy with the second-hand sample, then you hand tally every count, every vote that was tallied by that machine. And the hand tally becomes the official tally. It's really a very straightforward proposal. It requires some of the county clerks to do things differently than they now do, but it's a completely feasible way of doing it. I expect you're going to hear some testimony on this from the clerks and from other of our citizens. But I think for those of us who earned the privilege of coming to Salem because of vote tally, we understand how important the integrity and the honesty of that tally is. And I urge you to consider this bill, to make changes in it if changes are needed, and to pass it on to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. No questions.
Representative Robach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenlick, for being here. Having gone and watched the process at the clerk's office and recognizing that before they use a machine in any tallying, they always have a sample that they've developed, which they run through the machine to make sure it's exactly the same, I find it difficult to believe that we actually need this. You know, I had some concerns before the process until I went and watched exactly what was happening. I concur with you in your appraisal of our clerks because I think they really do. But so the question is time. When I think of how many votes there are on these ballots and I look at 1,000 of them, how much extra time do you think it's going to take to verify? And part of the problem in any election, when the results are not coming back in a reasonable time, people start thinking, now that's when a lot of things happen. So are you sure that this process might not, in fact, make people less confident in the system than more just because of the added time?
Well, I think an expert will have to tell you how much time it would take to tally, say, 1,000 ballots. I don't think it's a lot of time. And we do have automatic triggers for recounts if races are, are within, 0.5% or 1% or 0.25%, it'll automatically tally a recount. And incidentally, every recount that's ever been tallied since we've used electronic voting machines has shown to be exactly within the margin of errors. This isn't about problems that have been identified. This won't slow down the return because this process takes place between the 20th day and the 30th day after an election. It's a part of the certification of the election rather than the original tally. So it won't slow the ballots down. And also, I believe that it'll be very rare. that first sample of ballots won't validate what happened in the machine. And I started by saying that I have total confidence in our system. But it turns out not all our citizens do, and I suspect you're going to hear some testimony about that from some of our citizens.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Greenlick, for your input. I, as well, have some concerns, and I didn't until this last election, when we had a glitch in our system in Jackson County that specifically went to a ward, I believe it was, in Ashland, and I believe we declared the winner, and we declared the other person the winner, and then found out the original winner was actually the winner, I think. Isn't that the way that went?
I believe it, yes.
Yeah. Makes you nervous. You think about, I wonder if we had to pull some samples, cross-grain samples of other elections as well. And I don't know if Kathy did that. She's very prudent. She's very, very adept at what she does. But I have some concerns. Nothing is bulletproof. Nothing is bulletproof. So I'm kind of nodding to what you're saying. Of course, we're going to hear from the clerks here, and this is extra work, so I'm sure it'll be interesting.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, of course, in American politics, there's a long history of vote corruption. I remember a story of one of Huey Long's opponents who was running, I think, for statewide office and ended up not getting a single vote in his home parish. So, things have happened. We're long past that. We're long past Mayor Daley bringing in exactly the right number of ballots that he needed to control the Chicago elections. And we do have a long history. But there's a sort of magic in the machines now. And I think that's a sort of problem, is that if you had your neighbor sitting over here hand counting the ballots, it's easy to screw up a hand tally. I mean, in fact, I think probably the machines come out much closer than the hand tallies do. But at least it was Tom and Martha who you knew who were sitting over here counting the ballots in your precinct, and that gave you a certain security about it. Now there's this magic. You and I still don't really believe that airplanes can fly. They're much too heavy. But we tend to go flying in them anyway. And I think the same thing is true here. I think our vote count system really works. But I think if we can do something to assure the other citizens of the state that it's really working, it'll be really valuable.
Representative Rilley.
I just wanted to make a comment to a thing that Sal said. And I know he doesn't mean it the way I took it. That's why I'm going to make it here. And that is that he made a comment about the clerks, and we know we're going to hear from him because it's a lot of extra work. And, I've met a lot of clerks since I've had this position, and I know my clerk who's here today, and they have never been concerned, in my opinion, about more work. They do want to get it right, and they do care about doing work that matters, because they have only so much time. But I just want to make it clear, and I'm sure that Sal didn't mean that, because I've met his as well, that it isn't about them not wanting to do work. They will do whatever is expected, and they really do care about what they do. And they care about their honesty and integrity. And so when we make little remarks, and I know we've had people point that out before here, in different times, I think we need to be careful that we acknowledge that they're willing to do whatever the law says, and I think they think about these things a lot more than we do because it's their job. So I look forward to hearing from them too.
Yeah, I sat on this committee during the last session with Representative Thatcher. I believe we heard from every single clerk in the state as part of the process. And I have great confidence in our clerks, and they will do what they think they need to do, given the one constraint of the budget that they
have. That's true.
And that remains a constraint with them. So we need to be realistic and make sure that we don't accidentally provide tasks for the clerks that they can't meet inside the constraints that they have.
Any further questions? Representative Greenlick, for the record, if the Jackson County Clerk is listening back home, Representative Escobar and Representative Buckley give our full support to our party. Representative Greenlick, did you discuss this process with perhaps the clerk from your county? Or
we had a work group that was working with the LC that was involved. And it included both the Director of Elections from the Secretary of State's office and the current chair of the County Clerks Association. The clerks, you'll hear from them, and I don't need to characterize what's on their mind. But they, I think Representative Roblin described it exactly right, that they're very diligent, they work very hard, and they just want to get it right. But they also don't want somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about telling them how to do it in a way that's going to make more work. So I'd actually heard some of that from one of my two county clerks. I have two counties. And she was in my office explaining to me how naive I was in this process, and I accept that perfectly.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing the bill forward, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
I'm going to close the first public hearing on House Bill 3270. We will come back to this when Chair Rosenbaum returns. I'm going to open up the public. Now, should I open up the public hearing and work session, or just public hearing?
Just public hearing.
I'm going to open up the public hearing on HCR 8. And Dr. Sandberg, if you would be so kind.
Mr. Vice Chair, HCR 8 memorializes former State Senator Ted Halleck, who served in the Oregon Legislative Assembly from 1963 through 1983.
Thank you, Dr. Stanbridge. We have, looks like three people have signed up to testify, and you're welcome to all come up at once. If you'd like to, Judy Sugnett, Daniel Eisen, I can't get your last name, Daniel, I'm sorry, and Terry Bergson.
Eisenberg.
So two out of three, I messed up, and can I go for
them? Roll the chair.
Go for them all.
I insult the clerks. You can't get the names right. It's Southern Oregon.
It's a glorious Monday for Southern Oregon. That's right. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yes. My name is Judy Sugnett. I work for Representative Brad Whitt now, but for almost 38 years I worked for Ted Halleck in one way or another. Ted's best known for his legislation on land use planning, but he did many, many other things. One of his first bills was a bill which requires all the children in the state of Oregon to be tested for PKU. And that was in the early 1960s, and that was prompted because his son was affected by PKU very tragically and very, very retarded because of it. Ted had two other daughters, one of whom I'm sure you know. Her name's Stephanie Halleck, and she's the head of DEQ. And she asked me to convey to the committee her sorrow at not being here. She had to do business in Washington, D.C. for DEQ today. His other daughter, Leslie, lives in Toronto. I wanted to point out a few things that Ted had done that you may not realize he did. He got past legislation to require power companies to take the power that you might produce at home, more than you need, from alternative sources of energy. It's called wheeling. At the time, it was called wheeling power. And that was a new concept in the late 1970s. He also was the chair of the committee that developed the Department of Energy. He worked, when I went to work for him first in 1969, he had three bills that riled everybody. One was abortion, allowing it. Two was fluoridation of water systems. And the third one was gun control. So when I went to work for him, I got a great introduction. And he was one of the greatest teachers of legislative process. In 1971, there was a big problem getting Oregon to ratify the 18-year-old vote. It was being held up in both houses, and in those days, the Senate was run by what was called the coalition. And it seems the governor went out of town. The president of the Senate became the governor. And guess what? There were the votes there, and he figured out that the president pro tem could appoint people to committees. They appointed two more people to the elections committee and voted the bill out. And it was Halleck who dreamed it up, and it was carried out by a person named Harry Boivin, who is also a great character and a great legislator. And I don't know if there's any questions or anything else I can add. And I believe he's going to talk about the land use part of it.
Well, actually, I do have one question.
Sure.
Question. That was your first session that he had those three bills?
Yes. And I came in the middle of the session.
Well, I'm glad to still see you still here. Daniel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to comment on this bill, which would honor Ted Halleck. Good morning. Senator Halleck's public service was distinguished by remarkable foresight and courage. In 1973, Ted was instrumental in creating a statewide land use system to see that the essence of the Oregon that he knew then remained a part of the Oregon that we love today. Working closely with Senator Hector McPherson, Ted forged a bipartisan coalition that bridged rural and urban Oregon in support of Senate Bill 100. Senator Halleck also worked to establish the Energy Department and grant Oregonians tax credits for using solar energy. Later, he served on the Northwest Power Planning Council. Now in 2007, the legislature is working to improve and extend Ted's legacy in renewable energy and land use planning in the face of global warming and poorly planned development of natural resource lands by Measure 37. Ted had a reputation for his strong convictions and liberal use of language. One of the lessons we can take from Ted's accomplished career is that Oregon's environment is truly special. And I don't think you'd mind me saying this, we only do justice for our natural legacy when we fight like hell for it. Each Oregonian owes a debt to Ted Halleck's work. 1,000 Friends of Oregon urges you to pass House Concurrent Resolution 8 in his honor. Thank you.
And for the record, would you just state your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Daniel Eisenbeis, Legislative Affairs Director for 1,000 Friends of Oregon.
Thank you, Daniel. Madam Chair, welcome back.
Thank you. So are there any questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And it looks like we've completed our sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on HCR 8? public hearing, but we were posted
for. We were posted for a work session.
Okay. So seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on HCR 8 and open a work session on HCR 8.
Madam Chair, I would...
Vice Chair Buckley.
I would make a motion that we approve the resolution and send it to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves that we send HCR 8 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any...
Yes, Representative Thatcher. I just want to make one comment. Though we probably would not have agreed on hardly anything had we served at the same time, I just hope that we would vote to honor this individual and his service. And a diversity of ideas is certainly what makes for a more interesting legislature, so I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. That's a great comment. Representative Thatcher, Representative Hunt.
I think another point of common ground on this committee, anything, any resolution that ever says upgrade the general intellectual level of the Senate, I think is...
Something we can all agree on?
Madam Chair, I'd like clarification of that.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
No, I'm sorry. Oh. I'm not
No comment. Very wise. Okay, well, the clerk, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And the motion carries. I believe that Representative Witt might wish to carry this on the floor. We will, subject to his approval, assign Representative Witt as the carrier. And we'll close the work session on HCR 8. Okay, so at this point, I will reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3270. We have a number of people signed up to testify, and let's see if there's anybody from farther than 100 miles. And it looks like we do have Nicole Williams, so please come forward.
You can tell us.
Good morning. I think this is the second trip
Good
you've
morning.
Made to talk to us in the last
And certainly
week.
Many more.
Good to see you again.
Thank
Please go
you.
Ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Nicole Williams. I'm the Clatsop County Clerk, and I'm also the Oregon Association of County Clerks Elections Legislative Chair. Probably to no surprise to the committee members, the Oregon County Clerks are opposing House Bill 3270. And the reason is we still have many unanswered questions regarding this bill. In recent weeks, we have met with Representative Greenlick, as well as representatives from the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition about this bill. Today, I would like to present, and it's being handed out to you right now, a list of our questions in regards to this bill, and we're hoping that we could work through some of these unanswered questions before your committee takes action on this bill. First question, how would an effective random sample of ballots be determined when ballots that have been run through the vote counting machine and stored have no indication of date and time received or geographical area? It is our understanding that for an effective statistical sample to be valid, that you have to have the equal representation of ballots. And we have no way of knowing these because we have already ran them through the machine and separated them from the return envelopes and stored separately from those. Representative Greenlick stated that this sampling and count hand counting probably would not go beyond the first hand count because he has confidence in our counts and our machines, and that he believes that we would not have to count them or go to the second count or even the full hand recount. However, I do not share that same confidence, and it's not because I don't have confidence in how we counted our ballots. It's because I do not have confidence that we can achieve that equal representation of ballots that we would need for an effective random sample to take place. In Section 3, subsection of this bill, a committee must determine 30 days prior to the election the margins specified to be hand-counted. My question to this committee is, how does a committee determine this margin when the ballots counted by the machine is not yet known until after the election? Question 3. This bill in Section 2, subsection 3, requires a hand count to begin prior to the 20th day after the election. However, election officials are not required to certify their election until the 20th day. Would this mean that we would have to start prior to certification of this hand count of ballots? I believe it does mean that, how the bill is written. And if so, this has never been the case of how we've conducted hand counts in the state. And I would like you to recall that this was a cause of many headaches in Florida in 2000 when they were conducting hand recounts of ballot numbers that had not yet been certified. Question 4. Are the costs of these hand counts billable to the districts and our cities and other entities on the ballot, which is now authorized under our hand recount statutes? And finally, how does this hand count coincide with the statutes already in place for hand recounts that take place under ORS 258? It seems there are many provisions that would conflict with these current statutes. In addition to presenting this committee with these questions for your consideration, I thought it would be a good idea to talk about our processes and procedures we already have in place in our offices. Per ORS 254-235, all Oregon counties are required to test their vote counting equipment during an election. We use actual ballots from the election to do this. We mark them for different offices and races for that election. We do this twice before Election Day. We do it on Election Day before we run ballots. And we do this again after all the ballots are counted. We verify that the votes marked and counted on these test ballots and make sure that all ballots are being counted accurately. And I have distributed to the committee a informational sheet on this logic and accuracy test that we use. And I actually used this particular sheet in my last November election to explain this process to my election observers. In addition to the logic and accuracy testing of our vote counting equipment, in every election, if the margin between two candidates or measure is less than 0.5%, counties are required to automatically hand recount ballots. This happens in virtually every primary, general, or special district election in at least one or two counties throughout the state. And with all these recounts, we have never seen any evidence of malfunctioning machines in this state. An elector also has the right under 258-161 to file a demand for a recount. They may ask for a partial, specifying specific precincts, or a full recount, and must simply pay a $15 per precinct fee, which is a cash deposit to the state. If electors distrust our vote counting equipment so much, I would believe that this would be a reasonable course of action for someone to take to justify their cause. In addition to the recount statutes in place, the Secretary of State has recently adopted an administrative rule that allows the Secretary of State to direct a county election official to conduct an administrative hand recount of an officer measure when circumstances at the election put the accuracy of the vote tally equipment used in the county in question. Under this rule, a county elections official can also make that same request, and Representative Esquivel raised the situation that happened last November in Jackson County, and I believe that's what the election official did in that case. She went ahead, conducted the hand recount because she had a problem with her machine in that county. And so, you know, election official can also make that same request. And this rule extends beyond our state. If there's problems in another state with these machines, our Secretary of State's office can make the decision to have our county's election officials can recount those ballots because of another situation elsewhere. Representative Greenlick stated he had tremendous respect for Oregon vote tally systems, and I am happy to hear that. Everybody should. Oregon is the national model for how to conduct elections in the state. It's not because of the vote tally equipment we have. Part of it is the vote-by-mail system. However, it's because the Oregon County clerks take tremendous pride and work very hard to make this system work. And no one in the state feels more strongly about having our voters be confident in our process than the county clerks. Thank you for your time, and I'm available to answer any of your questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions, Representative Esquivel?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenlick brought up a hypothetical situation of where you could use basically a backdoor, get past firewalls in a program and taint that during a certain period of time. What do you think about that?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Esquivel, I know there is that paranoia out there that could happen, and I'm not discounting that. However, we have never seen any evidence of that, and what I go back to is our hand recounts conducted in the state and the verification of our results to those hand recounts, and I just have never seen any evidence of it.
Mr. Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, just a comment that in Jackson County, with the situation from the Ashland City Council race, I should note that both candidates had nothing but praise for the work of our county clerk and how that was resolved. Very difficult situation where a lot of confusion on election night and then for days following, trying to figure out which precinct votes had been impacted by the glitch. I don't think we still know what caused that glitch, which is a little bit disconcerting. Two questions. First, on the logic and accuracy test, when we run down the tests that are done on the machines, it does seem to leave that gap that Representative Greenlick talks about in terms of the period of time on Election Day. Again, he even admitted this is a paranoid approach to that, but the machines are tested prior to and after. What can you tell me about the running of the machines during the vote count itself? Would there, again, following up on Representative Esquivel's question, that's the period of time that seems to be called into question with this bill. Can you talk to me a little bit more about the probability of something happening to machines during that period of time?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Vice Chair Buckley, there is a period of time we go ahead and we run the certification, our logic and accuracy test, the morning before we start running the ballots. We don't shut the machine down. We then go ahead and run the true ballots, the actual ballots counted, and then after we're done running those ballots, we run the certification test again, the logic and accuracy test. Are you asking me, like, during the election, running the ballots as far as we don't run that test again? But I believe if we had any indication that there was any problems, like as far as a glitch or power outage, we would probably shut that machine down, not use it again that night, and go ahead and run our ballots on a different machine. We would have to rerun all the ballots, but, you know, we would do that. County election officials. I don't know if I totally answered your question, but...
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does answer the question for the most part. Again, just need to center on that one. You commented in your written testimony about the cost of the hand counts. Would there actually be a cost for a hand count of 1,000 votes? Would there be a particular cost?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Buckley, yes, there is. We prepared a fiscal for your committee. I believe the fiscal came out to be $68,000 for the first hand count. And that is assuming we would not have to do a second or a full hand count. And I did want to point out to the committee, I don't know if this is absolutely clear, but it's a hand count of the entire ballot. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Roblin.
Yeah, and I'll follow up a little bit. A regular hand count is a particular election within the ballot. So the ballot may have 14 elections on it. And when you do a hand count, you do one election at a time, right? So if you had to do a complete hand count of that machine, it would be complete hand count of all the ballots 14 different times to get to the answer at the end of the day whether all of those were correct. Is that correct?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Roblin, yes, it would be all the ballot styles and all the precincts, all the ballots, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Excuse me. You mentioned that there was no indication, you've never seen any indication of a problem. I'm just wondering what would be an indicator of a problem, what would raise a red flag for you?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Thatcher, that's a good question. I can think of a thousand scenarios in my head right now, but a few of the problems would be different power outages, glitches. Obviously, the results, if the results indicated anything to us that might alert us. I believe in the case of Jackson County, I mean, she ran her results at the end of the night, and she had more ballots cast are counted than actual registered voters in a particular precinct. So there are a few scenarios.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other question I have is, these machines aren't necessarily hooked up to the Internet while they're running. They're a separate machine. The software is in that machine alone. It's not something that's connected. That's my understanding. Is that correct?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Roblin, yes, that is correct. They're standalone machines. They may be in larger counties networked to other vote counting machines, and that was the case in, I believe, Jackson County. They have their own software in my county and several other counties. We program our own software. When we program our own election, we do not outsource that process. But even so, these are entirely by themselves and not networked or accessed through the Internet.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your
thank
testimony
you.
And for those clarifications. Next, we'll call Kathy Jackson and David Jackson. Would you like to come up together? Good morning. Let's go ahead.
Let me start. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Kathy Jackson. I live in Portland, Oregon. And for the past several years, I've been involved as a citizen activist working on the issues of voting rights and election reform. My particular emphasis has been on the area of legislative analysis. For some reason, I like to read bills and read more bills. And I read not only what comes out of this committee, but what comes out of committees in Washington, D.C. I come here as a concerned citizen to testify for critical changes in HB 3270. I strongly support the basic premise of this bill that a mandatory statistically significant verification is needed. Mm-hmm. But in light of pending federal legislation, I believe that important revisions are in order. I'd like to discuss some recent developments in pending federal legislation that requires significant changes to this bill. As you may be aware, a sweeping election reform bill has been introduced into the U.S. Congress by Representative Rushhold of New Jersey. It's called H.R. 811. It has broad support in the U.S. Congress with 199 co-sponsors, including the entire Oregon delegation. And I think that's probably one of the few times that all five members agree on anything. It's called the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act of 2007 and amends the Help America Vote Act in ways that are germane to HB 3270. HR 811 sets up requirements for ballot verification and mandatory paper audit capacity and provides for additional federal funding to enable states to meet the cost of the requirements of this act. So there's some federal money involved here if we do it right. It appears likely that HR 811 will be quickly enacted in some form and, of course, will only apply to federal elections. I suggest that the goal of this committee should be to revise HB 3270 to provide one consistent, scientifically sound verification process for all elections in Oregon. This could be done by means of a few strategic revisions. However, unless these revisions are made, we will have two different audit or verification protocols in this state, one for federal elections that's mandated by H.R. 811, and a different one for state elections that is mandated by H.B. 3270. And because serious flaws in the federal audit standards, we would not want to apply them to any election in Oregon. The audit provisions in H.R. 811 are not good. They're not based on sound statistics and are really not robust enough to verify any results. The audits called for in this federal bill are also cumbersome, confusing, and expensive. They mandate sampling 3%, 5%, or even 10%, depending on the reported margin in the races. This flat percentage of precincts approach has been tried before in Oregon and simply did not work. I'm sure the county clerks will agree with me that administrative recounts, as they were called, were expensive to administrate but not robust enough to be scientifically valid. So we don't want to be stuck with this flawed protocol that is embedded in the federal bill. Oregonians are smarter than that and have often led the way in groundbreaking legislation. The bottle bill, land use planning, are just a few ways that our state has blazed a trail for the rest of the country to follow. The train may have left the station at the federal level, but I think we Oregonians are smart enough to find a better way. Fortunately for us, H.R. 811 has a built-in escape clause. And here's the pertinent language. A state may adopt an alternative mechanism as long as the National Institute of Standards and Technology determines that the alternative mechanism will be at least as effective in assuring the accuracy of election results and as transparent as the procedure in the subsection A in this bill. The National Institute of Standards and Technology is the federal agency that develops and promotes measurement standards and technology. It's a bunch of scientists and geeks. If we do this right, we will get some federal funding and use our own Oregon-based solution to election verification. I propose to add the following three items to HB 3270. A uniform standard of verification will be applied to elections in both federal and state offices. Number two, the standard for verification developed by the Verification Committee under the provisions of this bill shall meet or exceed audit requirements which may be enacted as an amendment to the Help America Vote Act for federal elections. And the Verification Committee shall obtain certification from NIST, that's that bunch of geeks again, for sampling methodology and margin of error to be used under this bill. The Verification Committee shall also obtain a statement from NIST that the verification protocol they adopt is equivalent or better than any audits that may be required by the federal legislation. So if this federal law does not pass as currently written, would it be worthwhile to amend 3270 as I have proposed? In my opinion, it's a resounding yes. With the amendments I'm suggesting, Oregon will have a verification protocol that is not only developed by our state verification committee of experts, but also one that has been vetted at the national level by NIST. Oregonians can then be assured we have a scientifically sound and best-in-nation plan for election verification. Once again, Oregon has the chance to lead the way for the rest of the country. I strongly urge this committee to adopt these revisions to HB 3270, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Manager. Kathy, just to clarify, since I'm the father of one, the use of the word geek is meant in the, with the highest respect.
I work with geeks.
Just checking
that. They're some of my best friends are geeks. but NIST is kind of the high-level science group.
Very good. And just to clarify, Madam Chair, if I may, what you're suggesting is basically yanking out what Representative Greenlick has proposed in terms of a process and proposing that we have a verification committee to create a different process.
No, the committee, I'm saying that the verification committee would do the process as they are doing and then submit their results to NIST, and then we would have our free pass and some federal money maybe. Because there is some federal money to support the costs incurred under H.R. 811. But, you know, if we have to work it smart, and if we work it smart, we might actually be able to cover more costs than they think we're covering. But
I like the way you think, thank you.
Hey, I'm an accountant.
Please go ahead.
David?
Hi. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, would like to introduce myself. My name is David Jackson. I live at 10141 Southwest 55th Avenue, Portland. I hold a master's degree in political science from the University of Oregon, and I'm enjoying the NCAA tournament. For the past several years, I have been involved as a citizen activist working on the issues of voting rights and election reform. As part of my work on election reform, I have developed and recruited volunteer participants in an election observation program in counties across Oregon. I have come here as a concerned citizen to testify for critical changes in HB 3270. I strongly support the basic premise of this bill that a mandatory statistical significant verification is needed, but I also believe that revisions are needed. Without such revisions, this bill has serious flaws, which in my opinion make it unacceptable to Oregon. One of the hallmarks of Oregon's government is openness and sharing of information with citizens. As the saying goes, sunshine is the best disinfectant, and Oregon has a proud tradition of full disclosure of all processes and information connected to elections. For example, the latest innovation is the OrStar system, where political contributions and expenditures are posted online for all to see. If you go to the official website of other states, you will be amazed at how little information is available to citizens in other states about their state government. Oregon should be proud of this tradition of openness and transparency in government. One area of concern with HB 3270 is the public oversight and input to the work of the verification committee. As it now stands, HB 3270 provides for an appointed, unelected committee serving at the pleasure of the Secretary of State to control the verification process. This offers neither transparency nor accountability. Placing the verification committee in the office of the Secretary of State would be disastrous because it puts the verification committee under a partisan official. This committee must be as nonpartisan as possible. Our current Secretary of State, competent and fair as he is, remains an elected official who is affiliated with a particular political party. I recommend that members of the verification committee be appointed by nonpartisan good government groups such as the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, and the like. In addition, I suggest that the process would have greater public oversight with inclusion of the following requirements. First of all, the meetings of the verification committee shall be open to the public, with public input invited, and the proceedings shall be available to the public via publication on the SOS website, press releases, and other ordinary methods of communication with the public. Secondly, nominations from the public for positions on the verification committee shall be invited and considered in making appointments to the verification committee. There's another key idea that has been included in pending federal legislation, H.R. 811, which I suggest should be included in Oregon law because it increases public oversight. Prohibition of use of undisclosed software in voting systems. No voting system used in the election of federal officers shall at any time contain or use any software not certified by the state for use in the election or any software undisclosed to the state in the certification process. The appropriate election official shall disclose in electronic form the source code, object code, and executable, I hope I pronounced that right, representation of the voting system software and firmware of the commission, including ballot programming files, and the commission shall make that source code, object code, executable representation and ballot programming files available for the inspection promptly upon request of any person. I suggest that the following language from the pending federal bill, the Voters Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act 2007, H.R. 811, be incorporated in H.B. 3270. Public observation of audit. Each audit conducted under this section shall be conducted in a manner that allows public observation of the entire process. The reason I am suggesting that this is that under current Oregon law, only representatives of political parties and campaigns have the right to observe the recount process. The verification process would fall under those provisions of Oregon law. I strongly believe that Oregon citizens should have the right to observe all phases of the electoral process. Democracy belongs to the people, not just those with a personal stake in the outcome of a particular election. I urge that this clause be added to HB 3270 to ensure public oversight. While you are at it, I also suggest you add similar language to ORS 254.482, which defines which persons are authorized to watch receiving and counting of votes in elections conducted by mail. The same rationale for opening up the process that was discussed above with reference to public oversight of recounts also applies to the rights of citizens to observe other phases of the election process. As I stated at the beginning of my testimony today, one of the hallmarks of Oregon government is openness and sharing of information with citizens. I urge that my amendments be included in HB 3270 so as to continue and enhance this openness in the future. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I will be happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Roblin.
A couple questions. The first one, I want to thank both of you for being here because it is important, I think, to have people who see themselves as activists and who are looking at these things on a regular basis to testify. And my first question is, do you have, having observed these elections the last number of years, since we've had mail ballots and these voting machines, have you had any concerns about accuracy or anything with regard to how we're doing it right now?
What I have heard from what I have seen myself and what I have seen, what the observers have seen has been very positive. I don't recall any real concerns about the accuracy of equipment. Kathy has been involved too. Do you remember?
Well, no, actually what several people have remarked is that it's a black box. They can go in and watch the paper go in, and they can watch the paper come out, and they don't see what's happening in between. And that's where the issues are concerned. It's the black box software, and since we know that the two companies that provide equipment in Oregon have interesting ownership issues, Sequoia provides equipment in some counties, and when Cook County, Illinois, which is Chicago, was trying to determine the ownership of Sequoia, they said they had to go through two hemispheres and three shell corporations and still weren't sure whether that was really tied to Hugo Chavez and Venezuelan government or not. So that's one company. The other company the president and former CEO was Republican Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, and he won a regular, rather miraculous election on his own equipment. So pick which one you hate the most or worry about most, but there's room enough when private companies are involved to and black boxes are being programmed to be concerned. And I use computers all the time, and they do break. I had one last night as I was typing my testimony. I had the blue screen of death that said, this machine has encountered a fatal error. You will have to reboot.
So. Well, it's most of the people that have observed it have been very pleased with the process. They've been impressed with the work of the county clerks with the accuracy. There have been a few instances where people have been concerned about the security of ballots. Ballots may have seemed to have been left by themselves. They weren't by themselves because, as it turned out, our observer was there. We've had a few instances of people who felt they could not observe certain parts of the process. But on the whole, I think people are very, very pleased with what they can see. Again, the problem comes with what people can't see. People don't know what goes on with the codings of the system. They know that these machines can be manipulated by hackers and other people. They know that there are some problems with machines. And so there is not total confidence. I don't want to give you a wrong impression.
Follow on?
Yeah, actually a couple. Now.
Go ahead.
I guess the first one is, what has been your belief on the accuracy of hand counting? We've had some hand counts that come out each time they're hand counted differently in a number of different elections. So where do you see hand counting with regard to that as opposed to this one? And the other part of the question has to do with this process that you're talking about opening up to let more people observe the process. How many people are we talking about? Because I, having been in places where they try to keep this secure, do we need an auditorium for people to watch the process? Do we need to move the ballots to someplace else? Because these are limited space rooms a lot of times where this stuff isn't working about. So I guess, how do we limit it?
Well, let me start with the first one. As far as hand counting goes, I believe it can be very useful in cases where there is some inconsistency. We need an auditing system. You know, please be assured that that's essential. We can call it a verification system or what we like, but we need a way to check. And hand counting is a good way to do this. It's not always accurate in itself, that's true. But if there's indication of problems, I think it can be done. It needs to be done. The second question, there have been some real feeling in some of the counties. Most of my observations have been in Multnomah County, and they have the facilities to allow a lot of people to go in and observe. Some people have complained that they did not get close to some parts of the process there. A particular concern was where the voters first come in and have their questions about eligibility answered. You know, they would like to have a better idea. And Multnomah County has made some efforts to improve this. In other counties, it has not been such a good situation. In one county in southern Oregon.
Not Jackson.
Thank you. Not Jackson County. We had a case where nobody from a nonpartisan group was allowed in because the law says it has to be from a political party, and they said, well, they don't have the space for that. We've had cases on election day where people observe where they come in and they cannot be allowed to leave. We've had instances of people who have felt a lot of hostility, where people have had to actually represent a political party, even if they were nonpartisan, to be able to be observers, because they could not observe as observers for, say, the Voter Rights Coalition or for other groups. So there are some serious issues for access of observers, and
I did a report, which I'd be happy to share with you. I don't have it with me, but I can see that you get it. There's some recommendations I've made that would make the election observation process more open and would give people a lot more confidence in it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll call Nancy Metella and Virginia Russ. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we are very pleased to be here to testify in support of House Bill 3270. My name for the record is Nancy Metella. I'm from Portland. I'm a real estate broker. And this is Virginia Ross, who is from Beaverton, and she's an attorney. We are here officially representing the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition, oftentimes abbreviated Oregon VRC. This is a group that's been formed about 2 years ago, nonpartisan, nonprofit, expressly for the purpose of researching and recommending reform for our election system in Oregon. Let me begin by thanking Representative Greenlick and all of the other esteemed co-sponsors for this bill. We believe that it is a huge step to restore public trust in the integrity of Oregon's election system. We are some of those nervous citizens and are here to tell you why. For 2 years, we have researched and probably been pesky visitors of the county clerks and the state election office to figure out what is our system. And our conclusion is that we are the best in the nation, absolutely. And we were humbled by the information that came about, and we're always given plenty of time and effort on their part to educate us. We learned a lot. However, there's one area that Oregon is behind in. There are 15 states in the country that already have audit legislation on their books. Everything from Hawaii to California are requiring audits at this point. Why is this legislation critical for Oregon, besides we like to be best in the nation? Although Oregon uses paper ballots, our ballots are counted on optical scan machines, which are in essence computers. Now, we would like to suggest that there's not a lot of technology involved in tabulation. It's basically a glorified adding machine, so let that be noted. Computers, which this is, can contain programming errors. We all accept that. And they can contain embedded code that may or may not do what you want. Last Sunday or Monday, when you turned on your computer, if you glanced at your clock, it was changed. And were you connected to the internet? In my case, no. I had just turned on my local freestanding computer, and it said I was an hour late. This is embedded code. This is code that's put in the software that is triggered to act at a certain time on a certain day. And that's what we were talking about earlier, that could create problems on the day of counting, that some event or some time clock could trigger something happening that you don't have control over. And this can be malicious. It does not have to be connected to the internet to have it activated. Some problems can easily go undetected by federal and state software certification procedures, which Oregon does follow, and by the logic and accuracy testing that's done by the clerks. We've already gone through this. I'm going to skip what I had planned to say on that. But importantly, these computerized adding machines are manufactured and produced by private companies. Neither public officials who are responsible for conducting elections nor us citizens are allowed to look at the code or the manuals for these hardware and software counting machines. In fact, this was tested in the state of Washington by one of our fellow citizens when he requested a copy of the manual of ES&S software that counted his county's votes. He received, through the county clerk, a letter from the ES&S lawyer who said this was proprietary trade secret information that could not be accessed. Now, I submit to you that trade secret proprietary information is not needed to have an adding machine work. But, again, they considered that a trade secret that was important to their business, and that citizen was denied access. So, in the state of Oregon, as the Jacksons have already said, all of the machines are produced by ES&S or Sequoia. And they've already mentioned to you that whether you're one political persuasion or the other, you have reason to go, oh my gosh. In the back of your packet is what we call the genealogy chart, and it gives you a historic reference to where these companies came from and who owns them now. They're all private companies, corporations. In addition, in your packet, you have a bound summary that came from the Brennan Center for Justice. This is an organization that was formed by New York University's Law School, which included international experts on election systems, software, and statistics. And they issued that report, which we've given to you. They cited over 120 potential threats in typical election systems, including optical scan systems, which are the ones that we use in Oregon. The report specifically states, quote, systems with voter-verified paper records provide little, if any, security benefit over systems without such records unless there are regular audits and or recounts of paper records. And that's what this bill will require. HB 3270 mandates that an audit occur using hand counting of statistically accurate sampling of the ballots. We've already touched on the fact that most citizens are aware of problems across the nation, and how many times have we said, thank God, Oregon doesn't have those touchscreen machines. In Virginia, I'm sure there are a few people that wish that they didn't have touchscreen machines, too, because they couldn't recount and verify their election, and there was a flip-flop of representation there. So, you know, thank goodness we don't have those. However, in Oregon, we do have problems, and there has been testimony here that says there's nothing that's been overturned during our computer history in Oregon. Our research shows differently, and we can't verify this. This comes from newspaper clippings, so we have referenced in our written testimony where we got this information. So please verify if you will. But we understand in Newburgh, for instance, several measures were printed on the ballot in one order but programmed into the computer in a different order. This error, which affected multiple ballot measures, was discovered only during a recount. In Portland, there was a Metro Council race that had a data entry error which caused the computer to reverse the order of vote tallies. This also was only discovered when a candidate requested a recount. There are times when things like this could happen and the candidate doesn't know to ask for a recount. In Yamhill...
Nancy, we have your written testimony. We do have quite a few other people still signed up to testify, so if you could perhaps summarize it, that would be great.
Okay. So we are basically suggesting that we support Representative Greenlick in his bill, but that we do have a few things that we would also like to see as amendments. And We have gone through a system that has been vetted by a number of statisticians. Dr. Dave Thomas, who's a professor emeritus at Oregon State University. There are three statisticians on our committee. I have a degree in mathematics. I'm one of those nerds. And a number of other statisticians have looked at it. I know that the clerks are concerned with the cost. At most, 1,000 ballots for two-thirds of the county counties would be needed to be hand-recounted, and with the largest county being about 8,300 ballots. So Ginny is going to talk about the financial impact and summarize for both of us.
Madam Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Virginia Ross, and I'm with the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition. I'm just going to talk briefly about three things: the financial impact of the bill, the federal implications, and the two concerns, the two main concerns we have with the bill as it is written now. We are aware that the county clerk's budgets have been strained and possibly underfunded by the fact that there are these new equipment requirements, especially because of the Help America Vote Act. But that was a very nice thing for the federal government to help support and pay for the machinery, but we realized that the ongoing annual budgets have not been there to support the maintenance and storage and the extra work that might be available. But we believe that this verification procedure will not impose an additional budgetary strain, and that it will be simple, and that even, in fact, we have a track record. In Washington County, there was a recount of over 32,000 ballots, which was done in 7 hours at the cost of about $2,000. So well within a reasonable budget. In contrast, the procedure that Nancy has outlined and that's in your book pamphlet would only require a count of a few of, in Washington County, for example, only about 5,000 ballots. 5,500 ballots, less than 20% of the amount of a recount. Smaller counties would only require a few hundred ballots to be counted under our system. Also, poll workers are already employed during the weeks after an election, and we believe that the verification procedure would become just part of the routine for these poll workers who are already there on the staff. Next, I'd like to just quickly touch on the federal legislation implication in Oregon. We need to be ready for the fact that required audits are coming. H.R. 811, the federal bill, has strong bipartisan support, and we believe that the new majority in Congress is helping to fast-track that legislation, and as I said, it's bipartisan. We feel that it could well pass in this session. And we need to be ready for the fact that it is going to impose audits that, as was mentioned earlier, these audits are not at all adequate or up to the standard for Oregon. And we feel that the HB 3270 imposes a much superior verification method, since one is going to be required anyway. Also, the federal legislation will grandfather in any sufficient method that is already legislated here. So we need to possibly take advantage of that grandfather clause, and I think we can do much better than the federal. We believe that our method would be much more effective and less expensive than the federal audit. We already have our 100% paper ballots. And we also feel strongly that elections are a state's rights issue, and that we need to keep control over our own elections and not let them go off to a federal mandated audit requirement. Finally, I'll just touch on our two main concerns for the bill as it is written. One is the bill does not specify which races it is going to cover. And because this is left up to question, the committee, the expert committee that is appointed to administer this audit, might select all the races up and down the ballot or a small subset of races that won't help to verify the outcome of very important races, such as the statewide races. So we propose that all of all the statewide races be covered: president, senator, governor, secretary of state, attorney general, and the statewide ballot measures. We feel this is important, and to make sure all of the Oregonians' votes are treated similarly. Also, other races will continue to be subject to the recount laws as they are in place. Our other main concern is that this verification procedure needs to be the procedure that the Secretary of State observes before certifying the election. So there needs to be a clarification that the verification will be complete before the Secretary of State may certify the election. I think it's a little ambiguous in there. And finally, I'm just Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, we would like to answer any questions you have, but I'd like to follow up on something I've been hearing earlier, and that is, I'm not afraid, and I'm not paranoid. I'm a citizen. I'm not afraid of the fact that there's trade secret software counting our votes. I'm against it because it's inimical to democracy. It has no place in our system to have a veil of secrecy over the method by which our votes are tabulated. And so I'd just like to dispense with this idea of paranoia. I think it has no place in this dialogue. And again, I'm not afraid at all. So please ask us your questions. Uh-huh. And thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum.
Thanks very much for your excellent testimony. And are there any questions? Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your research, on the issue of software and proprietary software, have you come across any discussion of a system that would allow us to use public software in some way?
Madam Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Buckley, yes. In fact, I think today you'll hear testimony from someone on that issue because I'm not a software expert, but I know that software can perform miracles, and we need to be able to look at it. But yes, I think open source software would be an excellent first step for Oregon to move toward complete transparency. But I still think there would be a need, and we believe in our coalition that we would still need a verification procedure in our laws.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for your testimony. Next, we will call Deborah Whitcomb and Terry Bergerson. Come forward.
Good morning. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Deborah Whitcomb. I'm a Portland resident, and also I have been what I would consider a citizen activist about election issues over the last few years. I am here to ask you to make passage of HB 3270 a high priority bill for your committee. I feel we are in a critical period in the U.S. and that American voters need convincing proof at this point that their vote counts, is counted as cast, and that our elections, in fact, reflect the will of the people. I just want to share a few details about myself. I consider myself an average middle-class American. My life has many pluses and a few minuses. My husband was recently laid off after 7 committed years in his job due to long-standing funding problems at his nonprofit organization. My job provides family health insurance, but each year the health care costs climb astronomically, and my employer looks for ways to cut costs, including cutting benefits or increasing out-of-pocket costs to employees. We have a great 21-year-old daughter whose grandparents had the foresight to set aside money for her college education when she was a little girl, but that money was invested in mutual funds that haven't performed very well and took a recent plunge. So I don't bring this all up to have you pity me in any way, because my life is undoubtedly similar to lots of other middle-class folks, and all in all, I judge it to be a terrific life, and is rich in many things. But the thing I want to point out is that I don't have much power. I don't have a lot of control over the things, the major things that impact my life. And that is what brings me to a discussion of my vote and the way I feel about my vote. The right to vote as we all know, is a promise that through the vote, each person, whether a landowner or a tenant, a male or female, white or black, has equal power to choose elected officials and make political decisions. And with my vote, and only through my vote, do I have equal standing to Donald Trump, Paris Hilton, George W. Bush, Bill Gates. I am very attached to my voters. And despite the many inequities in our political and economic system, I do count on my vote to have real meaning and power. I vote in every single election. And until a few years ago, I hadn't given much thought to how my vote was counted. And as we all know, ballots used to be counted by hand, multiple observers, the public could stand around. A very reassuring, comforting procedure. But in Oregon, as we have heard, as in the rest of the U.S., most of the tallying of votes is done by machines programmed by corporations, secret software, et cetera. You've heard much of that. And I find this process to be like handing the ballot box to the employees of a private company, letting them go into a windowless room with no observers and report their election results back to us and not even telling us how they counted them. They could have used a Ouija board for all we know. And again, I would agree that this is not paranoia. I think the members that spoke for the organization gave a clear idea of what can happen. There is so much that can go wrong, from glitches to deliberate hacking. So how can I know that my vote is counted as cast? How can we all know that? How can we be certain that each of you was truly elected by the people? And those are the things that we want to know. And my understanding is that if we choose to use the convenience and speed of computerized vote counting, the only option we have is to verify the machine count with a hand-counted random sample of ballots. It's just part and parcel of using those machines. So I thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me to testify, and I hope that you will move forward with HB 3270.
Thank you for your testimony, and good to see you. And are there any questions for this witness? Okay, please go ahead.
Great. Madam Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3270. For the record, my name is Terry Bergerson. I live in Woodburn, Oregon. I'm a concerned citizen and have been working on election reform for the past 2 years. My work experience also includes 8 years working in new product development teams at Anderson Window Corporation in Bayport, Minnesota. I've also worked as a research support scientist at the University of Idaho, developing performance measures for the National Park Service in compliance with the Government Performance Results Act. The state's election process is the beating heart of our representative democracy in Oregon, and I applaud Representative Greenlick and this bill's co-sponsors for their efforts to bring the common business practice of quality control to our state's election process. This systematic approach to quality control started in industrial manufacturing in the U.S. in the 1930s. The first statistical process control was pioneered by Edward Demmings, who most of you are familiar with, during World War II to improve industrial production. Demmings was also instrumental in introducing a statistical process control method to the Japanese industry after that war. And we all know the rest of that story in terms of Japanese product quality. In current industrial practices, process controls in manufacturing operation usually proceed by random sampling and a testing of a fraction of the output. For the moment, let's consider the decision to add a verification feature to Oregon's election system, not in a political or a governmental context, but rather in a business context and from a quality control perspective. Perhaps this can help put the arguments presented here today in a more objective setting. In industry today, the decision to add a quality control process would ultimately be made by the company's board of directors. The board would not ask the assembly line managers responsible for daily production output if they thought a quality control system was needed, but would rather assume it necessary in accordance with current best business management practices. In fact, if line managers were arguing against quality control, it would be considered a conflict of interest. It's a bit like my employer asking me if I thought I need a yearly performance evaluation. It's also quite common for manufacturers to pay other companies to develop specialized equipment for their assembly lines. This would be similar to the state of Oregon contracting with ES&S and Sequoia to develop ballot counting software and equipment. However, it would be quite strange for the board of directors to rely on this outside company's testing process to assure that the equipment was functioning correctly on their production line. In reality, the board would assign the company's quality control department to develop its own independent statistical testing methods and procedures. From my perspective, the most important production system in Oregon is the one designed to allow for the transfer of governing power from the voters to our elected officials. In private industry in Oregon, modern quality control systems are used to ensure the quality of products ranging from canoe paddles to semiconductors. Ladies and gentlemen, if quality control is important enough for canoe paddles, it's important enough for our election system. I respectfully request the committee's support for passing HB 3270. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thank you both. And we actually have another bill up today, and we have someone who traveled a long way to testify. So I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 3270 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2762. And Mr. Stembridge, would you please tell us about this bill?
Madam Chair, House Bill 2762 clarifies that a person who resides in a shelter, park, motorhome, marina, or other location who is otherwise qualified to vote may register to vote and may use the office of the county clerk as the mailing address.
Thank you. And will Linda Smith please come forward? We are looking forward to hearing from you, and then we will go back to the other bill as time allows.
Madam Chair, if I can comment, this was brought to the legislature at the request of my county clerk.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Linda Smith. I'm the Klamath County Clerk, here testifying on behalf of House Bill 2762 on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Currently, Oregon law does not provide for some otherwise qualified voters to register to vote if they do not have a traditional residential address. An example is a continuous traveler who does not have a residential address in Oregon, but claims Oregon as his or her state of residence. These people may have been lifetime residents of Oregon and live in motorhomes or other recreational vehicles. However, no existing statute allows them to register to vote because they do not have a permanent fixed residential address. The Secretary of State's office has advised county election officials not to register these people because there is no law that allows for it. However, other state agencies, such as the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles, allows for these people to claim residency. The county clerks are supporting this revision to ORS 247.038 to allow for the same voting rights given to people residing in shelters, motorhomes, marinas, etc., that is now allowed for homeless people. This is very similar to how the state of Washington currently registers voters. If this law does not change, Oregon County clerks will either not register these otherwise qualified voters or will register them inconsistently county by county against the advice of the Secretary of State's office. In the 2004 presidential election, Clatsop County was forced to turn away four potential voters that fit this circumstance. We currently do not have statewide statistics available. However, the Oregon clerks maintain that this has been a problem at some point in all 36 counties in Oregon. The county clerks would like to thank Representative Buckley for sponsoring this bill and bring it to the attention of your committee. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2762? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2762, reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3270, and next we'll call John Lindbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing that bill.
You're welcome.
This bill's a good bill.
Good morning. Thanks for waiting so patiently.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm John Lindbeck, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office.
It's an interesting discussion this morning because you're now all getting a flavor of something that I've had the opportunity to wait around in knee deep for a couple of years because I'm one of two Oregon representatives to the Federal Standards Advisory Board of the new U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, which is the new federal agency formed to administer HAVA and the National Voter Registration Act. And this board has two representatives from every state and weighs in on standards for all that voting equipment that's used across the nation.
And just out of curiosity, who's the other one?
The other one right now is Annette Newingham, the Lane County Clerk. There's one state elections official and one local elections official from every state. John Kaufman, the clerk in Multnomah County, just finished a term on the board. I have to say, after sort of reading these bills, reading the federal bill, and reading this one, I walked in the room pretty neutral on this bill, but I'm leaning more towards opposition now because I think this bill needs substantial work. It's not that we're opposed to any sort of post-election procedure. In fact, the secretary is the first secretary in a long time to actually put one into rule, which is the one that Nicole Williams referred to earlier, that would allow for a so-called administrative recount of a small number of ballots if there is a suggestion anywhere in the nation or within Oregon that there is a problem with the voting technology that's used in our state. But I really believe this bill needs substantial work. There's way too many uncertainties with the way that this random audit would be conducted. And this committee and the county clerks and the voters of Oregon need to know before we wade into this just exactly how it would work. And I'll get into the details about some of those that murkiness, but I think Nicole's questions that she outlined for you and I believe gave you in written form provide a good start of the questions that need to be answered before a bill like this is moved on. The federal legislation that was referenced earlier in the testimony does have some pretty serious legs, as they say in D.C. I do believe that the odds are pretty good that something like that will pass. I don't subscribe to the theory that we ought to rush ahead and pass something first, necessarily. I don't see where that gets us anything. There was also reference in the earlier testimony that 15 other states have passed audit procedures. I think it would be a very wise exercise on our part to review what those other states are doing and see how it's gone. One of the things that I find particularly troublesome about this proposal in House Bill 3270 is that it requires the clerks, after the election, to randomly pull a selection of ballots that are supposed to be representative of all the ballots in that election, and it's a form of a statistical sampling process. We already in the Secretary of State's office administer one statistical sampling process, and that's the sampling process we use for verifying signatures in the initiative and referendums. It's controversial. A lot of people distrust that process. There's lots of litigation about it. We've already always survived the litigation because it has proven to be statistically sound. But we're, you know, using statistical sampling for verifying of signatures is one thing, but using it when you get into the arena of whether or not an election was sound, if that random sample is not adequate or there is something wrong with it, it will throw the candidacy potentially of every state political candidate in the state into question and throw us all into litigation. And we need to know very precisely how this will work up front in great detail and not, as this bill suggests, just sort of throw it to some unnamed, unknown committee out there. It's fine to have a committee, but there needs to be guidance given to this committee on several fronts about how this would work, and there is no reason why we can't examine much more carefully about how this random statistical sampling of ballots will be found after the election, considering how ballots are run through machines currently. The other thing I worry about with regards to the federal legislation is that we'll have one mandated federal audit and then a mandated state audit. We don't know what shape this legislation from the federal government, and I have a copy of it here, will be in by the time it passes. As you all know, legislation has a tendency to change from one group to the next. And there's a current discussion draft that has yet to see action in its first committee in the House. Yes, it has lots of sponsors, but it has a ways to go yet before it's passed. And I think there may be some benefit to Oregon and other states to sort of watch, participate, testify, provide guidance to our delegation in terms of proposals on the federal level that would work or not work here. One thing that we have been told over and over again, those of us who serve on the Federal Standards Board, is that there has never been a documented case in the entire country of the rigging of a machine as described by some of the folks who worry about this. And one of the missing pieces of information is, what are the odds of it happening? We've been hearing testimony for years now about this could happen, that could happen, this could happen, that could happen. A lot of these things certainly could happen, but a missing important piece of that is, what are the odds of them happening? And do you have the procedures in place so that if they did happen that you could catch it? And there's rarely any information on that provided in the testimony. Nevertheless, I don't want to diminish public concern about this issue. I do believe that, and one of the reasons that we adopted that rule a couple of years ago is that people wanted more assurance, wanted extra steps built into the process. But I'm also sympathetic to the county clerks in that the process they have needs to be meaningful, and it needs to be to fit into all of their other processes. And frankly, this seems like a huge change to me. Instant runoff voting sounds like a huge change to me. Fusion voting, which I understand is coming our way later in the session, is another huge change to me. And I have to sit back, because it's my responsibility to do that, and worry about how much change the system can take in a short period of time. And we can do serious damage to the system by placing radical, drastic change on it and too much of it, more than the county clerks can bear. And we need to pay very careful attention to that. The committee cited in this bill has 7 experts on it with no compensation. I don't get that at all. How are we going to find 7 people to do this job, which looks to me like it will be pretty high pressure and fairly substantial, and not compensate them for it? I would submit that we're going to have a hard time finding the people who are going to be willing to do that, especially in light of the fact that the decisions that they make will have a high liability factor to them. And there will be litigation, because there always is. And one of the questions I think you need to ask yourself about the statistical sampling process is, and I really do believe it needs to be done with such care, that you need to be almost confident enough in it that we don't have to count all the ballots to decide who won your race. We should just count a statistical sampling of them. And if you're not confident enough that the statistical sampling is accurate, that it would verify who won in your race without counting all the ballots, then we probably have no business doing it at all. So I suggest a lot more work on this legislation. Again, I have no quarrel with doing something more, but we have to be very careful with that decision.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative Roblin.
Actually, I could have a couple, but I see the time, so I won't ask them all. I guess my concern is on this audit. Are we auditing the results of the election, or are we auditing whether the machines counted it correctly? Because those are two different questions. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I can get that out of the, have I read the bill?
I'm not sure I understand it either at this point. Representative Greenlick has said over and over to me again that his main interest is auditing the results from each individual machine. But there is a suggestion there that this audit, that you'll be able to apply it to the results to make sure that it's counting correctly.
So,
yes, go ahead.
If it is the machines, and I'll make that assumption now because that's kind of what I got from here, then if we're auditing a particular number of ballots, does the machine keep track of each ballot and how it voted? Because if it doesn't, we have to know that in order to compare it, what the machine did to the individual ballots that are picked as the random sample.
I would say right now that that would mean an extra step for the clerks, that they would have to segregate. They're already segregating their ballots by precincts. Now they would have to segregate their ballots by precincts and by machine, and depending on how detailed the audit is and the requirements, this is one of the unanswered questions. What are the requirements of an accurate statistical sample of a bunch of ballots that have been run through machines, where some of the counties run them through in batches, some of them that are not segregated by precinct, some are segregated by precinct. Then you have a bunch of absentee ballots out there, those folks that are not at home in Oregon but are somewhere else. Ballots that are voted early, ballots that are voted late. There is a suggestion that an adequate statistical sampling of ballots has a lot more of a factor to it than just what machine it went through and what precinct. And that's one of the things that the statistical experts on this committee would have to look at, I think.
Follow up?
Yeah, this is my last question on this particular thing. So from my understanding, if I was going to be a clerk and I was just checking on the machine accuracy, what I would need to do is have some kind of random number generator tell me which ballots to select ahead of time, long ahead of time. So it comes out with a number. And when that ballot came up, I would have to separate it and say, this is the vote that the machine said on that ballot, or group of ballots, and keep that there so that at the end of the election afterwards I can go back and hand count those ballots and see if they came out to the same number that happened during the ballot time.
Well, I think this is part of the confusion. You may be right. I'm not sure. But it may also be correct that we've got ballots in an assortment of different boxes, segregated by precinct, segregated by machine, segregated by what day they came in, etc. And this group of statistical experts is going to go through and figure out how many need to be drawn from each, randomly drawn from each box.
Then I have, if it was in that scenario, then we wouldn't know, would we, how the ballots that were selected actually voted in the machine during the election, because it doesn't keep track of each ballot. There's not a number on the ballot that says this is the vote that I took.
That's correct.
So that way you would only know what those ballots looked like afterwards, but you wouldn't know how the machine counted them during the election.
Well, I mean, the clerks can order counts by machine.
Right.
They
but
can.
Not by individual ballots.
Correct. They are grouped together. These are all issues, frankly, that it's too easy an answer to just throw them to this committee. There needs to be work done on it, and a substantial amount of work so that everybody understands up front just exactly what the process will be.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
You're welcome.
And last but not least, we'll call Will Illingworth. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm pleased to be here to testify in support of House Bill 3270. I just have a one-pager here, and in the interest of keeping your time efficient, I'm going to deviate some from my written testimony. But I'm another of the geeks. I'm a software expert. My name is Will Illingworth, and I work in Portland, Oregon. I'm an open-source software expert, and I'm a member of the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition. And I'm here to give my perspective specifically about voting software. And the reason I'm here, the reason I drove down from Portland is because I believe very strongly that fair and accurate elections are a basic human right, and that voting constitutes the very serious action of our transferring, the voters transferring power to you, the elected representatives, and that it's a sacred thing. And that we can't have unverified elections, that it's fairly irresponsible, especially in light of the recent anomalies nationwide. And that the use of opaque election software in Oregon requires manual verification of the type provided by this bill. And I will concede that there may be some work that needs to be done on this bill, and I support the amendments proposed by my fellow Oregon VRC members, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and Mr. and Mrs. Jackson, and Mrs. Jackson and Mattella. Election software can't be transparent without source code, and my goal here is to educate you as to what source code is. It's the basic building block of software. It's the output of computer programmers. So we have a lot of people who have great jobs writing computer software. What they're writing is source code, and it can come in a variety of languages, such as Fortran, which maybe you've heard of. It's an old one, COBOL, more recent ones such as C++ and Java. Without the source code that generated it, you can't know what a program does. Source code generates a program that then runs on a computer. Without looking at the source code, that set of instructions that actually is the logic of the software, you can't prove conclusively what it does. It's a black box. Folks talked earlier about time bombs in software. That's an example of something where software would behave in a predictable fashion until a certain moment, and then the behavior changes completely. And without the source code, you can't know that that's going to happen. So that's why our election machinery is opaque in this state, because we use systems that have secret software, and that you can't have transparent elections without transparent software, so you need the source code. Proprietary software generally is considered a trade secret. People make money by writing software once and then selling it multiple times, and if they gave away the source code, they couldn't sell it. People would have what they needed to use the software without purchasing it. So the proprietary software model includes secret code. Just as a matter of fact, Oregon is lucky that we're positioned as an open source community that's burgeoning right now. You've got the Oregon State University Open Source Labs. You've got the Open Source Development Labs, which employs the author of Linux, the most popular open source operating system in Portland. There are groups like Posse, the Portland Open Source Software Entrepreneurs, of which I'm a member. If there were a geographical center to the open source movement in the United States, it would be here in Oregon, specifically Portland. And I think that represents a great opportunity for us to make open source voting software. And it can be an Oregon export. And this can be in the tradition of land use laws, bottle bill, other progressive, without being partisan, legislation that has been passed in Oregon. I'm really proud to be an Oregonian. I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian, and I just love those things about Oregon. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to change the nature of the software we use to perform this sacred act of transferring our power to you, our elected representatives. So, happy to answer questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Representative Thatcher.
Yes, at the risk of sounding like I'm asking a really dumb question, I'm going to anyway, because you are the expert here as far as software. We have particular hardware, of course, that runs on this proprietary software. If we came up with open source software, would it be able to work with the hardware? I guess that's my question.
Madam Chair and Representative Thatcher, it's actually one of the strengths of open source software that is cross-platform more so than proprietary software. So for example, Linux is the most popular open source operating system, and you can run it on everything from a wristwatch to a mainframe. It's portable. It's one of the aspects of open source software. So hardware would not be a problem.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative Roblin?
Just a little, again, since you're the expert here, putting in the little time bombs that people are talking about here. Can be done, you know, relatively easily by programmers. The question is having a key to know when to do it, which, when I look at elections, makes it very difficult for me to see how somebody can do it and then have it go back and forth at the appropriate times. If your county clerks are running these little spot checks all the time, if they're doing other things, it's difficult to do a date and time thing, especially if they do it before and after the elections. I mean, there's a little bit of things you could possibly do with respect to the time.
Mm-hmm.
But most of those need a specific set of criteria in order to have it happen and then shut down. Not saying it's impossible, but it becomes very complex. Is that not correct?
Not as complex as you might think, actually, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's for a computer programmer who has chops. It's not. It's what we say. It's not rocket surgery. It's pardon my idiom, but there's a great wide data set that a malicious piece of software could use to determine when to do its malicious tomfoolery. It could be the sample size of the ballots that are going through it. It could be able to recognize a test deck versus the actual ballots. For instance, don't do any hanky-panky until the ballot count exceeds 10,000. So you can run test decks through it all day, and it'll be valid. And then election night comes, you run the bulk of the ballots through, and you start seeing problems. As others have testified, we're talking about an adding machine here, which is really simple. And I think that can draw attention away from the fact that computer programs can be very complex and can process data in a lot of ways to make decisions. For instance, if you're shopping on Amazon.com and you buy a couple things, it's going to start recommending things that you'd like. And it's very accurate. It's kind of scary, actually. There's no reason that voting, malicious election software couldn't do the same thing and perform heuristics to determine when to deliver its payload, its malicious payload.
Okay, follow up.
And mostly just a comment. I really do like your idea about open source with regard to required software across the nation in voting. I think that has a resonance with me with regard to the whole thing you talked about with Oregon. So thank you for...
Thank you. I hope Madam Chair and members of the committee will look at the benefits I've listed for open source solution.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a quick comment?
Yes, go ahead.
President Thatcher, thank you for asking that question. My son's been trying to educate me for years about this, and I still can't quite grasp it, so I appreciate you asking that question.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I just moved you to the district, so keep up the good work, please.
And seeing no one further, that completes our sign-up sheet, and it is about time for floor session. So thank you very much, everybody who testified today or who attended. And we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3270. And we are adjourned.
Thank you, ma'am.